Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time to bring in one of my experts, Mr. Mike Brown. Coach Mike Brown, back to baseball, back to work, and school, kids in school. A lot of work you got to do there, young man.
Yeah, and it keeps us busy, doesn't it?
It sure does. It's always interesting, and of course, tuitions keep going up, and they don't know from any deflation. I don't know. I'm kind of wondering, where's all that deflation? I mean, I know there really is deflation, but they keep telling us there's no inflation, but yet everything that you use all the time that you need is a lot more money today than it was years ago. What do you think about all that crap?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's been the Fed's easy money policy, right? Hoping to create inflation across the markets, you know. Then if you just look to the educational system, because those numbers are certainly much higher than they were, you know, even 5 or 10 years ago. So, yeah, that's what they've been trying to get, and as of now, that, you know, we're really not seeing that. You've obviously seen tremendous deflation in the price of oil over the last 2 years. Across the commodity sector, you're not seeing it. You know, they've done a good job of reinflating the stock market, but I don't know that we're seeing inflation across the board. You know, maybe some inklings of wage inflation.
Where? Hold on, Sparky. Where's their wage inflation? I don't see any. I haven't seen
it. I said an inkling of it.
Oh, okay. You're inkling again. Okay, because and gas is not that much cheaper than it was. A barrel of oil may be cheaper, but the difference is the price you and I pay at the pump isn't that much cheaper. I mean, it's down from its highs, but this is how it always happens. They pump it up so fast, and they get you, oh, my God, it's going to be $5, it's going to be $6, whatever it's going to be. And also they get it back to $2.30, $2.40. Oh, okay, that's okay. I can live with that. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, but at least the oil companies, they go up and down and give you a shot, whereas the grocery stores, the minute, you know, a commodity goes up, they're raising their prices when the commodity is only 1% or less than 1% of the product. And Starbucks, they can't wait to raise their prices. But I never saw them come down. What do you think about that?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, once they get us used to it, they don't bring it back in. Unless they're forced to, you know, through, you know, a low-cost competitor. But, yeah, Starbucks, that doesn't seem to be any limit to what they can raise a cup of coffee to.
It's so amazing.
They would have cars on it.
Did you ever think you'd pay $5 for a cup of coffee when you were younger?
No. But I'm guilty of it, too. I like their product, and I will swing through there. I try not to do it too often, but I am guilty of it as well.
I'm only guilty of it once with you, because I wouldn't give them the $5. I can't stand it. And you know, again, you could get a regular cup of coffee. They're actually, the truth is, their regular coffee is about equally priced as anybody else, but it's the specialty products. Like everything else, they get you on the high margin items. But you know, when you talk about what you're paying, I mean, you got a house, you got expenses. Are your expenses deflating?
No, not in the least.
So
I think that's what, you know, what we're seeing is you're seeing inflation in everybody's daily cost of living. We have not seen it in wages for, you know, quite a bit. And, you know, the companies have been able to continue to squeeze out productivity, and maybe that's, you know, obviously the technology advancements have allowed that, to the point that, you know, it's really been at the cost of the middle class, because there's not been much wage increase at all over the last 10 to 15 years.
Well, how about we've got to the point where the big companies say, hey, you want a job? Work. You don't want a job? We'll get some. There's a waiting line that'll come in and work harder. So now, you know, the old jokes were, you know, back in the days, you know, every company had 17 vice presidents to do the job of one, right? And so now they've cut back and they're forcing people to actually work, versus, you know, giving them so much, you know, it's I'm not using the right terminology, but they're making you work harder for the same amount of money that you were making before, and they're doing with less people. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And I would say that hasn't led over to the public sector yet, but that'll be the next thing you'll see, because we're going to force it as taxpayers. But definitely in the private sector area. And I don't have the exact numbers at my fingertips, but I want to say we work on average 10 to 15 hours longer a week than we did, you know, 20 years ago, for basically the same money.
Right, because now a lot of guys got to work an extra job. It's really a shame, okay, when you look at the whole picture, because they have done dramatic damage. The free money policy has done dramatic damage to the overall system. Do you agree or do you disagree?
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, and I don't think there's a way out of it right now. You know, we're all bantering back and forth. This last week, you know, looking at that, waiting for the jobs number last Friday, and it, you know, we're talking about a quarter of a point. I mean, we are so far away. So let's say they raised a quarter of a point every other meeting. You know, for the next, it would take 3+ years to get back to 3%. I mean, we're so far removed that I don't think anybody knows what normal looks like anymore.
You know, I have a problem with that normal, because, you know, really since the Greenspan era, there really hasn't been normal rates. I mean, since Greenspan became the Fed chair, we have the Treasury market has been in the futures have been in a 36-year bull market. Okay, and they show no signs of slowing down, which means rates have been dropping for 36 years. Now, I mean, at some point, you know, somebody's going to step up and say, hey, you know, we can't keep doing this because we're losing all the little guys, and every company is now becoming too big to fail. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, certainly. You know, that's one of the things that came out of, not just in the banking industry. You know, I would take it a step further and talk about, from a political standpoint, you know, the regulations upon regulations, you know, who's pushing all this Six Sigma, we can't, you know, everything, you can't have any faults along the way, we're going to destroy you as a product. That's being pushed by the guys who can afford it, which is, you know, the large companies, the S&P 500 type companies who can afford the law firms and everything else, whereas, you know, the mom and pop, you know, can't compete anymore because you can't keep up with the regulations. And then the government comes in and does the work of eliminating the competition for these larger companies. That's exactly what has gone on. And, you know, certainly in the securities industry, that's, you know, you've seen that left and right, where they're just onerous, the regulations we have to keep up with. And, you know, now they're at another level with the fiduciary rule. So it's, what it's really doing is knocking out the, you know, the small operators.
Right, which is a brutal thing, because when you start knocking out the small operators, all you're really doing is you're knocking out competition, and when you don't have competition, listen, you're an athlete, you know about competition. If you got nobody to push you, you're not going to push yourself that hard because there's nobody behind you to make the job in jeopardy. Right? I mean, that's always a problem. You know, and I'll let you answer that when we come back from the break. But those things are always a problem. I wrote last week about Amazon and Walmart becoming too big to fail now as well. And we'll get into all that when we come back from the break. We're with my guy, Mike Brown, Coach Mike Brown, also played for the Dodgers, but really Brown Financial. What's the name of your company, big boy?
BrownCapital.org.
BrownCapital.org, because I can never remember it exactly, but I know he's one of the smartest guys I know, and certainly you ought to check him out. He's in Peoria. But make sure that when you miss an episode, you go to libertytalk.fm and download the Bubba Show every day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And we're going to stop by, have a break, and we're going to come back with Coach Brown right after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Coach Mike Brown, browncapital.org out of Peoria. You got to check them out, because I'm telling you, if you guys want to understand the markets and have somebody that's got your back, Coach Mike Brown's the guy. So, Coach Brown, you know, I was talking about competition. So, you're an athlete. You were in a competitive spot. You played in the Dodger system. Okay. Doesn't competition drive you to get better?
Oh, absolutely. I think we all work harder when we're nervous. If you're nervous about whether or not your name's going to be in the lineup card, you know, you're going to work harder. You're going to be pushed, you know. I think that same thing, you know, works in business. So if I have to keep innovating and stay a step ahead of, you know, my competition, the guy that's coming behind me, then, you know, I'm going to be better with my customers. I'm going to be better at customer service. I'm going to be more innovative. I'm going to come up with better products. You know, that's what's marked the upward evolution of the United States, is open competition, free market.
And it doesn't that make you better? Your job now, you can't talk directly about stock and stuff like that because, you know, you're under regulations. But does that not make you do your job better because there is competition out there? So you're trying to build the better mousetrap and be the better guy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in our business, you're judged on your picks, you know, right or wrong, for good or bad. You know, and if you have a track record with your clients, you know, certainly you could have a bad quarter, maybe even a year, but, you know, you're not going to get two, because there's always people knocking on their door, they're watching commercials, whatever. I mean, there's plenty of competition out there that's claiming they, you know, have a better mousetrap, so... you really have to be on your game if you want to maintain clients for long term.
And again, and that's the problem. I see that. And so what we're really doing is we're really taking out the small guy. I mean, there's no better example. You work in Peoria, you live in Normal, okay? You know, small communities, right? I mean, they're not Chicago. I mean, they may be big for down there, but they're small. You grew up in Lexington?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay, so small communities that forever depended on the community bank, the small banker, you know, to maybe sometimes bend the rules a little bit, to change a couple of things, knowing that a guy needed help. We don't have that anymore. They don't have that right. And the big banks are squeezing out the little banks with the help of the Federal Reserve. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that is certainly a different landscape now. I grew up in a small town, and, you know, a lot of the, let's say, you know, the people that I grew up with, farmers and that of that era would not have had a credit rating like we have nowadays. You know, they paid it for everything in cash. You know, they really, with the whole credit rating and, you know, nationalizing it and making it for larger banks, you take out that personal relationship. You force everybody to at least build a credit rating, which, what does that do? It forces people to pay interest. You know, at some point, and of course people say, well, if you pay it, it's off every month. But really, to build a credit rate, you have to carry a little bit of a balance. So they force everybody, you know, into this funnel where, you know, the guy could walk in and say, hey, I've been banking with you for 30 years. I need a loan for, I want to buy this farm. Well, I know you. I don't need to see your FICO score. You've been, you know, paying your bills with me for 30 years. Here we go. Here's your money. You know, and that used to happen. Or when a guy was in trouble, maybe he had a good business, something happened, he needed to get back on his feet. That, you know, those relationships don't exist anymore. The large banks have squeezed most of that out.
Well, let's look at this from another standpoint, right in the same vein. You know, Las Vegas has now become corporate America as well. And now, to get a credit line out of them, you got to pull teeth. You got to go through the ropes. You got to fill out all these credit apps. You got to be, you know, all these regulations, right? Boom, 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 right down the line, just like a bank. In the meantime, you know, 25, 30 years ago, and this is a true story. Okay, I walk into before they blew the dunes up, right? I walk into the Dunes Hotel. I see a guy, you know, and it turns out he's the casino manager. He says, "How much you need?" I says, $25,000. He goes to the case. He says, "Give him whatever he wants. I don't need an ID. I don't need anything."
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm not saying that's probably a little bit too loose, right? But my point is that when you eliminate the opportunity for a community banker to be creative, to help the farmer, to help the guy out, and work a creative strategy, which they've done, they've made everybody in the same black suit, black shoes, black socks, white shirt. And there is no difference. They're the same, except that the money that the big guys make is so much more than the guys that little guys make. And the little guy bankers pay so much more based on, like, for FDIC insurance. I mean, I know it's not an insurance policy, but the percentage of their profits much bigger goes into that pool than the big banks. So they basically priced out the little banks, which is why they always get bought out. And then we end up with, you know, we'll end up with 11 banks, I think, because 9% is the max ownership, I believe. Is that correct? Do you know if that's correct? And if not, yeah. Even if it's not correct, do you agree with my thesis?
Yes. And why we want that, I don't know. Is it the lobby? Is it the career politician that's created that? That, you know, obviously the big banks and the big corporations can lobby these career politicians, and a lot of cases they're bought and paid for. And it certainly is not benefiting the J.P. Morgan Chase can pay across the country and can drive jobs where they want the lowest rate to be. You know, if everything is working more at a community level, then, you know, there's more power of negotiation for the worker at that level, because, you know, the bank or the factory or whatever has to draw people from a limited area. So, you know, I do think it's staving off wage competition. You know, it certainly is paying off competition in the financial arena. It's not, in the long term, it's not going to be good for us. At some point, it'll all implode. What will cause that, who knows? I mean, it was the housing derivatives the last time. But, you know, it will implode at some point. It's just what the catalyst would be, nobody knows.
Well, my problem, Mike, is like a J.P. Morgan. You brought him up. I mean, you know, when they got fined $5 billion, you know, was it 10 years ago for the whale trade? Okay, that was like you taking out $5 out of your pocket. Okay, and the $5 billion was, well, we only did it once. This is the first time we've ever done this. Really, this is the first time you got caught doing it. But believe what you know. I love when they always say it's the first time, right? I mean, does anybody believe that was the first time that a guy ever tried to trade like that? I mean, it was the first time they got caught, which is why they did it. And the $5 billion for them, like the $14 billion for Apple in Ireland. Is really, it sounds like a lot of money, but in the big scheme of life and where we are, it's nothing but pocket change. What do you say?
No, I agree. Yeah, it's pocket change. In these situations you brought up, Apple, you know, to me that's just the government shaking a company down. You know, they agreed to a certain rate. Now you got the EU doesn't like it, so they want to, you know, they're going to force Ireland to raise that because they want the money.
Right. So, I mean, to me, it's just so ridiculous. And if the saddest story of it all, Mike, is that they should be in America and we should take them. Whatever they're paying, we should be taking it instead of it going elsewhere. That's the bigger problem, don't you think?
Oh, I agree. Yeah, whether we need to, you know, do it, why don't we do a tax holiday? Repatriate that money back here at 10%, you know, instead of 35 or whatever their corporate tax rate is at that particular time. 10% of something's better than 100% of nothing, which is what we're getting right now. So let them repatriate that. Let them put it to work here in the United States.
I mean, I'm in 100% agreement with that. I just don't understand what everybody's thinking. That's the real problem. When you look at the scope, these guys, what are they possibly thinking about? I mean, why is it that they're so stubborn about getting money that you can get? And it would certainly come off the bottom line, would it not?
Oh, absolutely. So, and I mean, how many? What's overseas? $1 trillion? I don't even know. But I mean, it's a huge number. That, you know, make it 10%, make it 15%, whatever. And yeah, people are going to squawk that are uninformed. That, oh, you're giving them a tax break. And say, no, actually, you know, it would be a compromise between the companies and the government to bring money back here that without that compromise is never coming back. So why not do it is the question. But of course it hasn't been done.
Well, yeah, because as you said in 1994, it's the career politician. I mean, look, I don't think any U.S. citizen would squawk if you forced all these companies to come back and gave them a tax break and let them pay back less money. Because at the end of the day, as you just said, 100% of 10% of something is better than 100% of nothing. And that is the bigger problem that we're fighting in this country is not only are we, you know, I think it's $19 trillion in debt now. Not only do we have all these problems, but we continue to manufacture our own problems as we go. This is Coach Mike Brown, Mike Brown, browncapital.org. You got to check him out. He's in Peoria, and we got to make sure that you look at this guy because he's on top of the markets all the time. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. You missed an episode, libertytalk.fm. We're going to stop out here for a break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll be right back after the break.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz, and I'm with Mike Brown, browncapital.org, browninvestment.net on the net. Is that right? Or .org on the net?
.org.
Okay. And so, Mike, you know, President Obama made a claim that he finally fulfilled one of his promises. He was going to put all the coal companies basically out of business. And with that, he took... I don't know. I have no idea what the number is, but obviously all the investors in Walters Energy, Arch Coal, you know, you name it, the investors. So not only did he take all the companies out and destroy, you know, hundreds of thousands of jobs, he also destroyed the wealth of companies, individuals, and other people. But he made his promise good. What do you think about that?
Oh, yes, he did. Yeah, he was, I was one of them. We, you know, certainly placed a bet on coal when I was wrong and thought that Romney was going to win. And I thought that would allow the coal companies to bounce back. And, of course, that election didn't turn out that way. So, yeah, he kept his promise there. He definitely has completely bankrupted the coal industry. And we'll see what the ramifications are of that, you know, 10, 20 years down the road. Because I don't think, you know, and certainly those jobs aren't coming back anytime soon. And, you know, is renewable energy ready to step up and take the place of coal around the world? I don't even think it is here in the United States yet, much less around the world. So, I mean, countries are still going to burn coal. They're just not going to do it. You know, there are going to be American jobs.
Right.
Creating it.
Now, I've said this on this show before, but I want to get your take on it. I have no problem with them trying to eliminate, you know, I have no problem with them trying to be green. I have no problem with them trying to get away from things. However, I thought that the job, the way they did it, could have been done so much better that if they would have said, hey, we're giving you 10 years to hunker down, to cut it down, and to start, you know, not bringing in new people, and let all those people that were in that area where they could be out of the workforce in 10 years, plus the other people that get them a chance to be re-educated, okay, which is one of the bigger problems, because typically most guys that go down and work on a coal mine are not college educated. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you were giving them a chance to retrain, you know, give those companies a chance to change themselves, see if they can... you know, turn themselves into maybe a renewable energy type company. But yeah, that was not done. I mean, you know, they went at the coal industry, you know, with a sledgehammer, and they succeeded.
Right, and for no reason. I mean, you could have easily just said, "Okay, here's the plan. We're gonna you're going out 10 year, whatever the number is." But you got a chance. So everybody had an equal chance instead of just being out of a job. Okay, out of a job, out of education, and where are you gonna go now? So now you're a guy that was working on the mines that was maybe making, you know, I have no idea, but let's say $80,000 a year with benefits or more. Who knows? Okay, so now you're making 8 1/4 an hour with no benefits. How you could do? How you doing? You know, I mean, it just. The way that we run the ship here seems to be so lopsided. It seems to me that they're trying to create more socialism, because we already have socialism mixed in. I mean, that's really in any economy. There's a little bit mixed in. But I think they're trying to turn it all the way over the other side as they eliminate small companies, competition, as we talked about, and the way that they're building things. They're not trying to bring in new people. They're trying to put the old people out and bring in nothing. I mean, is there any? Do you have any thought to that?
No, I completely agree. There's socialism in every economy, and you have to have some of it to make things work. You know, the government has to take on some of the great projects that, you know, individual companies simply don't have the means to do. Whether it's, you know, building a national highway system, those types of things, but things like what type of energy we use, what type of product I buy at the store, or what type of automobile I choose, you know, whether it's an electric or gas. I think we can all have a social conscience, but I think you need to let the market dictate where that goes. You know, I think there's certainly a lot of righteousness at times from some of these politicians that they know better than everybody else. I think you let the market decide. You know, if let's face it, our cars certainly burn cleaner than they used to, you know. You know, from everything one of the comedians I saw recently, you know, it's like, okay, if cars are really that bad for the ozone, why are they legal? You know, why don't we just mandate right now everything goes electric right now? They're not doing that. So, you know, I think there's an inherent distrust. You know, let's take cigarettes, for example, you know. Are cigarettes bad for you? Yes. Can you still buy them? Absolutely. You know, it's like, okay, is it really that bad for them? Oh, because you need the tax revenue. Okay.
That's right. You can buy all you want, baby. There ain't no problem getting tobacco of any kind, you know, because, again, who really runs the country, the lobbyists, the big oil and big tobacco? I mean, look, I get the money part. I mean, again, and I don't have a problem with it. I have a problem with if you don't fess up and pay up, then you get put out of business. And I have a problem. I have a fundamental problem with that. I have a problem with the way that we run the entire situation economically. And I think that, you know, it goes back to what we started out with, where, you know, you go to a store and Janet Yellen keeps saying, we need inflation. And I know by my personal bills that they're a lot more today than they were 5 years ago or 6 years ago. And I'm not making as much as I was making then. So not only am I getting whacked by what some call the hidden tax of inflation on what I'm spending, I'm taking in less. That's a double whammy, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and that's, you know, by the way, where else is there inflation? In your tax bill, right? And if it's not in your federal, your income tax, let's say those rates have been static, it's, you know, you want to renew a sticker here in Illinois, it's $111 now to renew my license plate sticker. You know, that's across the board with everything. You know, your real estate tax is significantly higher than it was 5 years ago. You know, there's no control on that whatsoever. So you're seeing, you know, call it a triple whammy. You know, you're making less, there's the hidden inflation, and, oh, by the way, your taxes are higher than they were. So, and again, if anybody talk to a term limit's a good idea, absolutely. Do we have term limits for the president? Yeah, that's, yes, and as we should. Why can't we get term limits for the rest of the Congress? Does that not work?
Because they're too powerful. They're too powerful a lobby. It's no different than Warren Buffett and Bill Gates and the likes of those guys. I mean, let's face it, okay? They give equally. I don't know if they gave equally to Trump this year, but they gave equally, used to give equally to both parties. And they would, you know, crawl in bed with the party that was in power And not that they were getting any special favors, but they were getting special favors. You know, I mean, Warren Buffett, I still explode every time I hear him talking about we should pay more taxes. I go write a check. And when he starts talking about inversion, because he inverted himself 2 weeks after he made a big speech about doing it. And to me, I don't like hypocrisy. I don't care. You know, if you believe it, then stand by it. But don't go and violate what you just made a big speech on. I just don't know. I don't like that. To me, it becomes a bigger problem. And that is the one appealing thing about Trump is that I don't think he can be bought. Okay. And I do think Hillary can be bought like any other politician. I mean, look, you go to who gets you the most amount of money and keeps you in office. I mean, that's the big, typical way to go. And I think that's a bigger problem that we have to address as well, is the way these elections run, the way the campaigns and the donations are allowed and the whole thing. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my personal bet on it is, you know, pick a number. Is it 10 million, whatever that number is that you need to once you get the nomination, here's your, you know, $10 million that you can spend. The other side gets $10 million. That's all you got. You know, we turn it into where elections can be bought, and that's just ridiculous. You know, take it out of the public coffers. Here's, you know, whatever the number is, $5 million, $10 million, $15 million, and this is what you have to spend. You know, use it however you want. But it's an equal playing field for both parties, and, you know, let the people decide. So let's just... You know, unfortunately, if I've got $100 million and I can run these, and let's face it, Hillary doesn't need the money. I mean, she's getting, you know, the mainstream media for free. I mean, it's absolutely embarrassing and ridiculous what they're trying to do to Trump. Yeah, whether you like him or not, that's not your job. Your job is not to skew an election because you feel this way.
Right.
And that's not what, you know, journalists used to do. You know, their job used to be to report the news. You know, don't slant the news, don't embellish the news, don't, you know, salt the news with your personal opinion, report the news. You know, and if you want to write an editorial on Saturday or Sunday, write an editorial. You know, but that's an editorial. You know, that's not the headline news. And they click on the internet anytime, and if you're on a mainstream media site, any picture you see of Trump will be of him pointing at somebody, sneering, you know, they catch him, you know, mid-sentence where his face looks contorted. And those are the pictures they use. I mean, it's comical if you recognize it, but that is exactly what they're doing. So they want to frighten people. You know, he's going to be bad. Oh, can you imagine him with his finger on the button? You know, let's face it. I mean, he's certainly no more dangerous than Hillary. I would argue that he's far less dangerous. But they've painted him as some kind of madman, which he clearly is not. He just says things that, you know, the mainstream media and the political correct culture doesn't like.
I agree.
And you start to push back on that. I mean, the dean at the University of Chicago put out a letter there, you know, telling them this is not going to be a political correct environment. You're going to be challenged. You're going to be pushed. You know, different ideas need to be talked about openly. It may make you uncomfortable. You may get offended. You know, so be offended.
That's it. Hold that thought. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horch, with Mike Brown, browncapital.org. Check him out. The Bubba Show, miss an episode, libertytalk.fm. We'll get you the download. We'll be right back after the break with Mike Brown, the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horch.
I was proud.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Mike Brown, formerly of the Dodgers, now coaching at Illinois Wesleyan, but also my number one guy in the business who understands it and gets the prognosis of what you're supposed to be trying to do, knowing that you don't always pick winners. That's just not the way it is. But practicality and probability is the way we do things. All right, Mr. Brown. So we've got a market that's been 38 days or 39 days in solid consolidation. We know it's got to break out one way or the other, and either it could break either way. What, in your opinion, is keeping this market tied up in knots that's not allowing it to move more than 1% either direction over the last 38 days?
I think people are unsure right now. You've got an election year, obviously. We have not seen, what are we, 5 quarters now with earnings declines? To your not fit earnings, I think it would be lower if it were not for the fact of, you know, the interest rates being as low as they are. The fact that we're awash in liquidity right now is one thing that I think is keeping it up at this point. But we certainly are not seeing earnings gains. Now, coming into this quarter, this next quarter here, the comps will be very easy. Will that allow us to move higher? Maybe. But, you know, we are being very careful in here. I think September and October, you're going to see volatility. You know, people are getting back from vacation. I mean, August is, you know, historically a low-volume month. So I think you're going to see a return of your volume and volatility here over the next 8 to 10 weeks as we move into the election. And, we, you know, if those numbers, you know, if the comps are going to be weak, if we come in under those comps, then I think you'll start to see a correction.
Right, so you're thinking the correction will be. I see. I always believe my views are that we already know all the economic data, and that's really not that important in the short term. I believe the correction will be driven by something that we can't even fathom right now, and it'll be something that will scare people, not necessarily about the economy, but just in general, which will then create a market sell-off. And then, of course, I mean, the markets do what they always do. They rally, you know, about 9% year over year. So, you know, they'll go down for whatever period of time, and then they'll find a base and a bottom, just like they find a top, and will go. But in the meantime, this, you know, 38, 39 days in a row of not moving. And, I mean, you know, first there was the Fed talking about a rate hike, and then they weren't going to rate hike. And now, you know, now there's an election. So there's all these things that are going on, and but we do know, you and I both know, I think we agree, that the overall economy is not very good. The global economy is not very good, but yet we continue to hear how good things are going. And I guess my question is, if they're so good, where are they so good? Can you tell me?
No. I think in order to really get things going, you're going to have some fiscal stimulus, which is, you know, I mean, we all know the bridges and the roads need to be upgraded. I think you're going to have to see some political will to do something along those lines, you know, on a national scale. You're going to have to see some Reagan-era-type deregulation, you know, take the gloves off of people. You know, outside of the technology sector, we don't, you know, how much innovation is there anymore? There's certainly, in the banking and financial sector, the regulations are strangling. So I think you're going to have to see some Reagan-era type deregulation along, you know, combined with the fiscal stimulus package to really get that, you know, 4% type of growth cooking along. And if they can do that, then that may get them out from behind the eight ball with interest rates. You know, if we are seeing 4 or 5% growth in the GDP, okay, maybe now we can raise interest rates without completely killing the patient.
I mean, I don't see. First of all, I actually believe that GDP is no longer a proper measure of the economy. I think that that's changed. I think we need a better way to track. But in the meantime, I think you and I can both agree that there is no growth. There is nothing really that's exciting. Other than if you're putting people out of business, which is really what we're doing, is we continue to thrive on putting the little guys under. And, you know, without the little guys, without the middle class, you really never have a thriving economy. You really have just a lot more problems overall. And I think we're seeing some of that play out by some of the violence. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we haven't seen violence in the streets like this since, what, the 60s? I think it is, you know. Although some of it is due to, you know, economic opportunity. I mean, there really is little or no economic opportunity in a lot of these urban areas. You know, and then, you know, that's a place, okay, we talked earlier, there are some forms of socialism. Instead of it being the entitlement programs, let's take some money out of public coffers and say, hey, you know what, I'm going to give you a 10-year tax abatement if you go in and open this type of business here, which will create, you know, 300 jobs. You know, those types of things. Let's get creative where let's try and get jobs back in the inner city. You know, because, you know, people go to work, you know, a lot of those people would. So I think we need somebody with a new vision, something creative. You know, this continual, let's kick the can down the road, create more entitlements, let's bring more illegals here. You know, the term illegal, I mean, that cracks me up, too. That gets banned around. It's like, oh, they're illegal. It's illegal. You know, by the very definition of the term that you're using to describe these people, they have broken a law to come here. You know, there are legal ways to immigrate to this country. So I think, you know, if we could, somebody like Trump, and maybe he will not succeed because of some of his other flaws, but somebody who's outside the box of, you know, the political mainstream and has no reason to continue along the path that we have, which is just we're centering more and more and more power in Washington because they get everybody, you know, they're getting the majority of people hooked on these freebies, the entitlement programs, things like that. And, you know, people don't even realize when you give up that, you're giving up control of your own life. So hopefully we can get that turned around before it's too late. You know, we'll see.
I don't know that we're going to get it turned around in maybe your lifetime, probably not mine, but I would hope so because, again, there has to be, you know, a better way to do things that would appeal to the masses, you know, because that's really, you know, what we're born on and what we grow on. But unfortunately, with the current structure in place, and it's not just Obama. I mean, you know, just the whole current structure
started long before him.
Right. The whole current structure of everything. And I said it in the first segment. I said, you can go back to Alan Greenspan when some of these problems started. I mean, because really what have we done for 36 years is by watching the interest rates, we pushed the kick the can down the road to try to make things easier for everybody. And what you end up with is a mess. And what you end up with is a pile full of debt. And you and I both know one thing. Too much debt is not good for anybody, no matter how much money you can print. What do you think?
No, it's a tax. I mean, that's the interest on that debt is a tax on your future earnings. So that's, you know, Obama, you know, he's a flashpoint. But like I said, this has been going on for 36 years. I mean, bigger and bigger. You know, what's other than Reagan, you know, bigger and bigger and bigger government, you know, all the way through the 90s, the 2000s, and now here we're at 2016. You know, Obama ran on a platform of change. You know, my question would be, what has changed? I mean, really, what has he changed in 8 years? I mean, it doesn't seem any different to me.
He changed my net worth in the 8 years.
He changed,
you know, and it's funny. And as we come to a close here, but, you know, everybody gives him credit, including himself, for the stock market. And I go, look, you could have put anybody in that office, the market was about ready to go up. Just like now, I don't care who wins, the market's about ready to go down. It's got nothing to do with the guy who's in the office. Everybody wants to make it about that, but it's that the office is the office, and that's the deal. You got 10 seconds. You want to give me an answer to that?
No, absolutely. He ran on a populist push, but then at the end of the 8 years, what's he banging the drum for? Then he made more money for the top 1% because they're the ones who own the stocks.
This is the Bubba Show, and we have been with Mike Brown, browncapital.org. Mike Brownie, how do you get a hold of you if they want to get a hold of you?
Browncapital.org, or you can reach me at 309-674-1040.
That is Coach Mike Brown, my man, my buddy, and this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwich. You missed an episode, LibertyTalk.fm. Until tomorrow, everybody have a great day. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you back here tomorrow. The Bubba Show.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.